America leads the world in medicine development. It matters. We get new medicines first, nearly 3 years faster. 5 million Americans go to work because we make medicines here at home. And not relying on other countries keeps us safe. But China is racing to overtake us. Will we let them, or will we choose to stay ahead? When America leads, America cures. Let's tell Washington to keep us in the lead.
Learn how at americacures.com. Paid for by Pharma.
Okay, we are back. It's Inside Boxing Live. Dan Canobio, Chris Algieri. We're presented by PPV.com. Big PPV.com summer we got coming to you with Pacquiao and Barrios. Gervonta Tank Davis is going to be fighting Lamont Roach. Teofimo Lopez tweeting out a picture with a PBC hat on last night. Is he joining the fray? But we'll be with you all summer long. PPV.com is the place to watch those fights. Stream them live on your phone, any device, big screen TV, of course. Join us in the live interactive chat. Join us all week long. Just booked all my flights out to Vegas. I'm very excited to get out there. You know, I haven't been out there in a few months, so I get really excited when I book those flights. A long time, Tuesday to Sunday in Las Vegas with the PPV.com crew. Chris, we're back. We took a little bit of a hiatus. I was traveling. You were traveling. You're a little bit under the weather. We're fine. We're back. Inside Boxing Live ain't going nowhere. A lot to get to. A lot to get to on this episode.
Yeah, we're fine. We're back. I know you guys have been clamoring for this episode. This is going to be an epic episode because we have a ton to talk about. Ton to talk about. So much has happened. But yeah, man, let's get right into it.
Yeah, I don't have any time for pleasantries. I know you're doing good. I know you're great. I'm good. Blah, blah, blah. Weather's shitty here in New York. Let's get into it. Give you what you want. Keyshawn Davis, let's start here. Good God, I've had a few days to really dissect this, and I'm sure you have too. Make sense of all this. Comes in 4.3 pounds overweight on the scale, which is a decision. He made a decision. I'm going to blow past this weight. I'm going to give up my belt. I'm moving to 140 anyway. I'm not going to show any remorse on that scale. And I'm going to put Edwin De Los Santos at an extreme disadvantage. And it comes out that Edwin De Los Santos, the reason he was out of the ring for so long is because he had a blood clot in his leg. He makes the weight. He looks like a skeleton in there. He does his job. Usually when these things happen, they come up with a price. A monetary figure is thrown around and the fight goes on, especially when it's a hometown fight for Davis. They sold a lot of tickets, which makes it even more egregious is that he knew that in the back of his mind, like, they're not going to cancel this. I'll just come in overweight and I can eat this, you know, steak tonight. I can drink this gallon of Gatorade. I'll show up tomorrow and do whatever. No. Credit to Samson Lukowicz and his team. They had a deal. They renegated on the deal. They said, my fighter's safety is more important than money. Keyshawn Davis gets stripped. The fight is off. Abdullah Mason gets elevated. We'll start there. This, him coming in overweight, how much did it shock you? Because it wasn't something that was talked about a lot. It was his first defense in his hometown, and he blows past the weight. I know you're pissed off about that. I am too.
Definitely pissed off. Really surprising for all the things that you said, especially the hometown situation. And I don't know, man. There's a lot of ways to look at this because – listen, I don't care if you – I mean, if you've been paying attention, you know Edwin De Los Santos is a dangerous, dangerous guy that a lot of guys don't want to fight. Keyshawn going after him initially, I looked at that like, yeah, Keyshawn, acting like a champion, going for the dark horse in the division. But then you blow the weight. Listen, you're the favorite anyway. You're fighting in your hometown. Now, are you doing this because you were trying to look for an extra advantage? Were you doing this out of completely disrespecting the hometown, the promotion, your opponent, everything? And being like, oh, listen, I'm going 40 anyway, but listen, I'm gonna get this wreck one more time at this weight class, and I'll take this check and keep on going. I don't know, a lot of questions about what's going on in that camp, dude. When you're 4.3 over, the fact that he's at the weigh-in arguing with Abdullah Mason, like, dude, you know you're not making weight.
Like, that was the press conference.
Press conference. Excuse me. You know you're not making weight. That was the day before. Like, you're not making weight, and you're calling out guys on the undercard. Like, the disrespect for De Los Santos is out of control. Everyone, of course, but De Los Santos specifically. And that's why I think Nathan Lekowitz, one of the best managers in the world, did his job. Because man, that taking care of your guy, Samson, as you said, Nathan's son, Samson,
that's his son. Yeah. He's a listener. Yeah, good guy.
Shout out to Nathan. That's our guy. But yeah, Samson Lekwitz, one of the best managers in the game today, did his due diligence and protected his man. I mean, that's what you're supposed to do. And the card blew up. But man, Abdullah Mason, kick a fight.
You know, boxing, sometimes we get these headlines that suck. And we're like, oh my God, another prima donna American boxer. You know, it's been a rough 6 weeks for American boxing scene. And we're like, oh, Keyshawn Davis, this is the guy we can believe in. You know, this is the guy, this is the new age. He's knocking guys out. He's winning titles. He's got the home crowd around him. You know, this guy in 13 fights has become a world champion, 14 fights, whatever. You know, all right, we can rally behind this guy. Then he comes in and does this. But the great thing about boxing, there's always someone next. There's always someone coming up the pipeline. Abdullah Mason being on this card, getting elevated to main event in Keyshawn Davis's hometown. And Abdullah Mason's got brothers, too. It's like the Davis brothers and the Mason brothers. And it's a stark difference, I mean, in the two of them.
Mm-hmm.
What we saw on Saturday night with this brawl, whatever, altercation with Albright that we'll get into, too. You know, for the most part, you know, I don't know what happens behind closed doors, but the Davis brothers had a pretty good reputation. You know, they got off the streets, they got out of trouble, and they're in the ring. But the Mason, Abdullah Mason being on the elevated to main event, had to have just pissed off Keyshawn Davis even more. Keyshawn Davis has no one to complain about. He has no one to blame but himself. No. Because, like you said, 4.3 overweight, this is a decision. And the part that pissed me off is, like, Gustavo Limos did this to Keyshawn. I know it's a little bit of a different situation because Limos was not the champion. But he came in grossly overweight. He came in and made a decision.
And Keyshawn said, I'm going to punish him for that. And Keyshawn was mad. He said, I'm going to punish this guy for doing that.
Well, you know what? You know, it's funny you say that. He said he was mad. Like, we had him on our show, and I thought he would be a little more upset. I was wondering why he wasn't so upset. I know he was saying, like, I have to keep calm, and I can't let, you know, Limos, you know, psychological warfare as well as trying to gain the physical advantage in there, coming in overweight. But I remember in the back of my mind thinking, like, why is Davis, like, he's handling this a little too well. I didn't think it's like, oh, because he's going to go and do this in his next fight. And he's going to come in 4 pounds overweight.
No, that was never on the mind.
Opponent. No, but I was thinking in the back of my head, it's like, you know, like this guy just did this to this De Los Santos when Limos did it to Davis. And, you know, we saw the pro box card, a fighter coming in, blowing past the weight. You know, there's a bigger discussion here. I want to get your thoughts on that, too. It's like, and this is like used to never happen, you know, top ranked guys. And I was around a lot of boxing guys this weekend in Orlando with this most valuable prospect card, like Antonio Tarver, some boxing managers, trainers. And they're like, what the frig is going on with these fighters blowing past the weight and not and trying to think it's not a big deal?
Yeah, I don't know. This is a little bit of a new generational thing. I mean, we saw it a little bit with some of like Mexican fighters back in the day. Like Brandon Rios used to miss weight, but he tried and was killing himself to make the weight, and right. Then would just miss.
This is no trying.
These
this
guys
is,
blowing.
This is like right. Middle fingers up,
bro. Anything over 2 pounds is there's no excuse. 2 pounds is out of control. 2 pounds is. I've known for a week in advance I should have called the promotion and then recontracted the weight, which is fine. But listen, if Keyshawn was like, listen, a week before, be like, listen, I'm sick. We got to push back the whole card. I can't make the weight. You know, whatever. That's happened too. You hear about a guy getting sick? A lot of times it's just weight. They're not really sick or minor injury. They're not. A lot of times it's the weight. So yeah, it's a little peeling back the curtain for you people at home. You know, there are ways around this, and being clear with the promotion, you can figure things out. You can do the contract, the weight, whatever. You can change weight. This is a title fight, so obviously you can't. But there's ways to handle this, and this was the exact not way to handle it, especially with what happened afterwards.
Yeah, there was the situation, but I thought about this too. It's like, why didn't Davis's camp reach out to De Los Santos's camp a couple days before? And say, listen, we're not making 135. We're going to make 138. Yeah. Then I realized, you know what? You can't do that because De Los Santos still wants to try to win the title. So he has to come in at 135. So they have to make a decision. They would have had to make a decision, De Los Santos' team. Do we fight it at 138, 139 for the payday? Or do we make 135, still get the payday, and potentially get the belt, which equals future paydays? That's why that didn't happen. That's the situation of Davis being the title holder and only De Los Santos being able to win the title if they would have fought. So that goes out the window. Yeah,
well, we're splitting the baby. Make 37. You make 37. I fight for the title. You can't fight for the title. You still get the payday. You still make the card because it's your hometown.
Well,
but you got to struggle a little bit.
Here's the thing: De Los Santos got the full purse. Keyshawn Davis got $0. Zero.
Yeah.
And ended up making a fool of himself afterwards. I just think, how can this guy? He just cratered any goodwill that he had. This is going to be a really, really tough. It's going to be a hard thing to get over. It's going to be a really, like, I thought just the weight. What's up?
Took a lot of L's that night.
A lot of L's. And I thought, you know, you can get over the weight. We've seen fighters miss weight. David Benavidez lost his title on the scales. It stuck with him for a few years. And then he went on to win more titles. He went on to be a fan-friendly fighter. And I thought that could be the case for Keyshawn Davis. All right, you missed the weight. Hopefully you learn from it. You go to 140, build your way back up. You're still an exciting fighter. It's gonna be there hanging over your head for a few years, but eventually you'll be able to shed that. Then we have this situation after the fight. Kelvin Davis is fighting Nahir Albright, getting pieced up. He ultimately loses Kelvin Davis. Apparently, Keyshawn and his brother Keon Davis, who had a win earlier in the night with a beautiful body shot, approach Albright in his locker room after Albright's win. There's apparently a headbutt. There's some type of altercation where they're framing it as they tried to jump Albright. The Davis brothers tried to jump Nahir Albright because he beat their brother. It spills into the hallway. Keyshawn Davis's baby is in a stroller. He's grabbing the baby. I couldn't believe my eyes. Like, and I'm someone that follows boxing, the most ridiculous sport in the world with the craziest headlines and the most wild scenes on a daily basis coming to my phone in headlines that all of you see it, who will listen to this podcast, are kind of numb to some of the things we see in boxing. I could not believe my eyes when I saw this on top of the weight. And I was like, damn, this kid is sabotaging his career. And how does he recover? I know it's a little dramatic because he probably will be fine in the long run, but good God, like jumping your opponent's what? I can't even wrap my mind around how insane that is.
It's such childish, like just crazy spiraling reaction and attitude. It's so crazy unprofessional. And listen, I've my favorite champions of all time, right? Were Sugar Ray Leonard, Alexis Arguello, and Oscar De La Hoya. Those are the guys, I shouldn't say all time. Those are the guys I grew up looking at and idolizing. And the reason I idolized them is because they were gentleman champions. They acted like champions inside the ring and outside the ring. Obviously, Oscar later on was a little different, but while he was in his heyday, you know, he was pristine. He was the golden boy. I liked those guys. I liked the Sugar Ray Leonard, golden boy, Oscar De La Hoya, golden boy, Alexis Arguello, consummate gentleman, acted like a champion in and out of the ring. Not making weights, not what champions do. Jumping your opponent, your brother's opponent after they lose, that's not what champions do. That's not what grown men do. It's a bad, bad, bad look. And Nahir Albright, I listened to a bunch of interviews, acted like a mature professional. It's like, hey, man, he wasn't talking badly about them. He just is what it is, explaining what happened. You know, didn't even want to bring up that he got headbutted, you know, but, that came up and his team had to separate security. And Nahir, like, listen, he probably thought they were coming in to be like, hey, man, good fight. And then, it turns into an altercation. You know, like what it's crazy. Hell? Like I would never even think that if they came in and just be like, it is what it is, man. Good fight, whatever. Even Nahir, he was doing the interview and the interview was asking him like, oh, this has got to like dampen your shine. And he's like, nah, he's got the belt on his shoulder. He's like, no, he's like, I won tonight. You're not taking this away from me. Like that's what a champion acts like. That was super impressive from Albright. I think he comes out of this looking real good because, one, gets the best win of his career, looked good doing it, and gets a big win, gets a big upset, and then now there's even more attention on him. But, man, a lot of L's taken by Team Davis that night. And like you said, it's going to be hard to get out of that ditch that they just dug.
One thing on Albright, and I saw a few of these tweets, it's like, man, started snitching. He's singing like a canary backstage. Look at him just... He gets the win, then he goes backstage and he starts snitching. Like, what are we snitching? This isn't the streets. This is box. This is a sport. And the more
this is a job, career.
It's a professional setting. And the more we have that mentality, like, oh, he's snitching, and Keyshawn, like, he was sticking up for his brother. There's not many of those voices, but I saw a lot of that. It's more likely just an overview of the entire sport right now. The more we have things like this happen, this jumping situation, like things, and then we say, like, Albright is in the wrong here for snitching on what happened inside of a locker room, the further the sport gets away from anything mainstream. The further the sport gets, the more the sport becomes an absolute sideshow, and it becomes even more irrelevant is when we hear things like that and we don't bring it to light about how ridiculous this is. So I really don't want to hear that Albright was snitching. He had Mark Kriegel in his face, who was a great investigative journalist. Before he was a boxing commentator, he was an investigative journalist for New York Daily News. Guy knows how to get answers. They went back there. ESPN knew they had a story. And they pounced on it, and they brought it to light. And good thing they did, because we might not have heard about what happened with Davis. But yes, absolutely horrendous, abysmal, embarrassing weekend for Keyshawn Davis. He just looks like, you know, he shows up eating popcorn, and you know, just that wasn't a good look. I didn't see much of any sorrow or like forgiveness for the situation.
No remorse.
Zero remorse. You know, his brother ends up putting out a statement, not Keyshawn. The older brother, Kelvin, saying this is not how we want to handle ourselves, blah, blah, blah. You know, where's Keyshawn Davis's statement? I understand the older brother. But Keyshawn's the name here. He's the guy everyone tuned in to see and came out to see. The mayor of the city was there. He, like, gave him a key to the city. That is just crazy. And you brought up a good point. It's like with him sitting there on Friday at the press conference, doing an interview with Christina Poncher, going through the whole thing, doing interviews with all the media outlets. You have Bob Arum flying out there. You have everyone there for you. And in your head, you know that you're sitting there at like 140 pounds. Like, you know that you're not making the weight. And like, whoa, he just thought everything was going to be fine. He just thought, like, you know what? They'll sweep this under the rug. I have my handlers. You know, I'm a bring ambassador. I'm this, I'm that. I have millions. That's another problem too, is like, I want these fighters to get rewarded for their hard work, and you become a champion, you should be able to enjoy everything that comes along with it, the money, the fame, the attention, everything. But sometimes these guys are getting too much too quick.
Yeah.
Like, that has to equate into this. I understand his body was, and ultimately he grew out of 135, but how he handled this and how he went about it, it's like, dude, these guys are his head got huge in the last couple of fights, and I know Sean Zatel also said that as well, interviewing him. He felt like, you know, he's acting different, he's moving different, but I didn't want to say anything because it would have looked like I was trying to hate on a young fighter. But in hindsight, now you look back, like, dude, this guy was just, they're just sometimes giving too much, man. And this is what you saw. Like, this is a crazy result. Like, this probably won't happen ever again with the jumping, the compounding of it. But like, I feel like these guys, it's just too much for some of these fighters, and they can't handle it.
Yeah, I mean, sometimes, like you said, it's too big, too fast. But also, just in general, just some people are just not made for the spotlight. They're not made for all the accolades that come from being really good at something. And don't get me wrong, Keyshawn Davis is phenomenal. He's one of the best young athletes in our sport today. But man, there's a big mental side to this. If this was just physical, a lot of the other guys would be at the top, but it's not. This is a very mental sport, and a career is a marathon. It's not a sprint. Getting to that first title is one thing. It's like how long you stay in the sport, how you carry yourself in the sport. It's hard, man. It's really hard. Talk about mental health issues, which is something that Keyshawn has struggled with in the past. It's not going to get easier when you're at the top. It gets a lot harder. It gets a lot more lonely. And the way that you carry yourself really matters. That's what I harken back to what I was saying about being a champion. Being a champion is being able to handle not only the fight, not only what you can do in between the first bell to the last bell, but what you can handle everything outside. Because listen, that's most of the time, dude. That's what being a champion really is handling everything else outside the ring. The ring is a sliver of what you have to do. All the training, all the public appearances, all the media that you have to deal with, man, that stuff all compounds, and it's really, really difficult. So I understand when young fighters falter. But man, this was a big, big misstep, and it compounded. It was like multiple missteps. Just if it was just the weight, that's one thing. You know, if it was, I don't know. I can't forgive the whole jump in the opponent, the brother's opponent.
Well, it's like, what are you thinking?
I can't get on that at all. That's wild, like, to me.
What are you thinking? What are you possibly thinking, Keyshawn? Like, you show up to this event after embarrassing yourself, and refunds were being given. and you go make, I can't even wrap my mind around how ridiculous that is to go into the your opponent, your brother's opponent's locker room because he beat up your brother. And it probably did go down like that. This is a big time probably for me. Like, walked in and Albright was like, oh, wow. And they probably were like, looked like they were giving some type of congratulations. Then they switched up on him. Then they switched up on him. Like, what is that?
Yeah, I don't know, man. Like, and even I think I saw an interview. I think New York said he's like Crawford and Bomack came in and they were like, "Hey, man, that wasn't supposed to happen." That's like that.
You know what they said?
That's
sorry for the inconvenience.
Yeah, I mean, it's something. But Nahir was like, "Cool, I got a picture of Crawford." He didn't care. He was like, "All right, whatever, we're good."
Where is Terrence Crawford? You know, he's supposed to be like the leader, the captain of this team. It's Crawford. It's Stevenson. It's Davis. They all train together, Colorado/Omaha. They're all part of this clique. They're all running around together. Where is Crawford? I know it's not exactly his job, but you know he's gonna have. They're gonna have the rehab process for Davis. Like, I know Andre Ward to a lesser degree is part of that as well. But I don't know how he bounces back. And Top Rank too. Like, where does Top Rank fall in all this? Like, how much are they supposed to be involved with him making the weight, him not making the weight, like how that was handled, how it would be handled afterwards? Does Top Rank have a big say in this, or is it more like closer knit to like management?
So Top Rank, I've been around Top Rank when guys don't make weight. Bob really,
he didn't even try to defend him on Friday.
Nah, he freaks out about that. He's that's one of the biggest things he talks about. He's like, your first job is to make weight. So he's cut guys over that before. But Keyshawn's different. He's a different level of guy. Is he too big to fail? That's really the question. Like, even from the personal standpoint.
Come on, man. He's like 13 fights.
But listen, dude, you cut him, then what? Your opponent.
I'm not saying cut him. I'm just saying like, something went wrong here, and he was getting horrible advice from his team. And I don't know how much – like, I obviously know the inner workings of promoters and managers and all that, but, like, how far is Top Rank out of this? Like, did Carl Moretti, those types of guys, did they know that he was sitting there at 140 having trouble? I'm sure they knew a little bit, but, like, my point is afterwards now, like, getting Keyshawn back to good graces and handling him is something that Top Rank's gonna. I ultimately should fall on them. They are the promoter, but it's gonna be a lot of people trying to figure it out, because I do think he'll be. Go ahead.
A lot of damage control from here control. That's that damage control is what is gonna happen, and I don't know when they're gonna start that. They really haven't yet. I think they're kind of just letting everything blow over for the time being, because the boxing news minute is really short. So, you know, we're already moving on with everything else going on. But there will be some kind of damage control. I'm sure there'll be a statement. There'll be something. And then it'll go on and life goes on. Career goes on. They'll hopefully either make this fight later or a different fight, whatever. I mean.
Well, that's the thing. It's like, all right, people are tweeting me like, suspend him. Who's suspending him? Well, you know, like who? The commission? No, like the Virginia.
Fight somewhere else. Yeah,
fight somewhere else. He has to have
the promotion so they can't make money. No, they're not going to do that.
That's not going to happen. It's like, he has to look inward, Davis, and look at this if he doesn't look at this as a learning situation.
Or does he? Does he really? I don't know. Maybe
well,
he
doesn't. That's the thing. It's like,
this is boxing. It doesn't matter.
And these guys are getting thrown so much money. It's like, he's going to end up on a huge card next. He could very well end up on a ring card fighting in Saudi for the most money he's ever made in his life, simply because there's not a lot of championship level fighters out there. There's only X amount of fighters to choose from for these big time cards, and he's a big time name. And if anything, just put the name out there more, becomes a villain if he wants to. I don't know. I mean, I hope he learns from it. I hope he handles himself better, because he looked promising at one point, and I still believe in him. But you know, this was
he has the opportunity to be like the face of the sport moving, you know, in the future.
That's what
like
I mean.
He is that good, and he does have that much going for him. So
I hate that we have to talk about this. Like, it's U.S. boxing needs stars, and this was one guy I was kind of counting on. I was kind of counting on Keyshawn Davis, and I can't believe this. Well, we have to come and talk about ridiculousness, overweight, not like a loss in the ring. Like, oh my god, he underperformed. That would be like he probably wishes that was the case.
Well, that's normal. That's normal. That happens. Good.
Right. No underperformance. Just blew past the weight on his own and then jumps altercation, acting like an absolute idiot. Abdullah Mason gets pumped up to the main event, stops Jeremy Nakatia, And now with this WBO title vacant, which Keyshawn Davis gave up, he's likely to fight Sam Noakes next. That's a positive to come out of this, is Abdullah Mason and Davis were getting into it on that stage at the press conference, and I really like that. It's like, well, maybe we'll get Mason versus Keyshawn one day. But now Mason's progression really ramps up. His next fight is likely going to be for the vacant WBO title. So, like Abdullah Mason, if you haven't heard about him, if you were questioning him, he is on the doorstep of becoming a title holder in this sport. And that is going to be huge for boxing. It's like, all right, let's turn our attention to Abdullah Mason now.
Yeah, I mean, Abdullah, like you said, he's getting ramped up now, which I don't love because he's still young. He needs a lot of development. Listen, the Nakatila result, that was going to happen. That was no surprise. It's cool that he got moved up to the main event spot, but that's not a deserving main event fight. It's great. It was a step up fight because it's a guy that actually gave Shakur Stevenson some trouble, a guy who is somewhat dangerous, but has recently been basically fodder for the guys coming up. Muratia dominated him, destroyed him. So it wasn't the worst case scenario, though. No, it wasn't the worst case scenario. Not at all. No,
you had the future star just chilling.
It was good for him, but I don't know, man. It's I don't want them to move him too fast. He got dropped three fights ago, you know, yeah, against.
He was going to get this shot no matter what.
Yeah. Listen, being around those guys, they want to move fast. They think he's ready. They know he's ready. And I respect that. I hope he is, but I mean, I think he has all of the tools, everything. And in stark contrast to what we saw from Keyshawn and the Davis brothers this weekend, Abdullah Mason and his family and his team and his unit are class acts all the way through.
They were pressing him so hard to say something about the jumping situation and the overweight. He would not bite.
He's a gentleman.
21 years old. I would have, like, in today's boxing, he could have easily thrown out a soundbite that would have went everywhere on every boxing page.
Him or his family at all, dude. I've been around these people. They are super mature, super level-headed, smart, very, very smart, very organized. They're a very impressive team. They're one of the most impressive tight-knit teams I've seen in any young fighter ever.
That's what I've heard. I've heard that from a lot of people that spend time around him. He's got a lot of brothers too. They don't compete in boxing, but they're all part
of the team.
Right. Combat sport, upbringing, Muay Thai, wrestling, all the Mason brothers, but he gets the win. He systematically broke down Jeremiah Nakatila. I didn't give Nakatila much of a chance because he had been stopped a few times recently. But for Mason, I was looking for certain things in this fight. I was like, all right, I want to see how he responds to getting dropped those previous fights. I want to see how he responds to being elevated to main event with more eyes on him. I want to see how he responds to, if he wins his fight, he's an inch closer to being a world champion. And mostly, like, I want to see how he fought inside that ring, breaking down his opponent, not throwing those looping shots, keeping it tight, crisp. That's what he did. I mean, this was like a breakdown. I mean, he shut the guy's eye, and that was a systematic break. It was a very mature performance from Mason inside of the ring. I mean, he's got everything. He's a blue chip prospect. This is the closest thing we have to a sure thing in many years. My dad texted me, and I obviously respect his thoughts on boxing and comparisons. He said Mason reminds him of a young Errol Spence, but not as busy in terms of punches thrown inside the ring, but the same type of killer mentality, kind of the same build, and just that ferociousness and that will to end fights.
And breaks you down. He's not necessarily like a one punch guy. He's not setting up one shot. He is just systematically chopping you down, busting you up. Spence was a little more durable. And if you're going to compare them head to head that way, Spence used to walk through shots, you know, and Abdullah's a little craftier in that he doesn't need to do that, but also doesn't take them as well, obviously, because he has been down. But that's a good call. Papa Bob. That's what by the way, I gave your dad a nickname. I call him Papa Bob now.
That's amazing. I heard you guys be texting.
We talk. He set me up with some boxing historians. I had some questions about some things, and I was like, "Who?
How many Kenobios are you going to chat with? I have brothers and sisters. You're going to hit them up."
You guys are all beneficial in different ways.
We're all intertwined. Me, Nick, Bob are in the boxing world. Some guy came up to me and was like, "Are you Nick, Bob, or Dan?" I was like, "I'm Dan."
That's funny.
He's like, oh, I was talking to your dad. I was, yeah, yeah. But look at this lightweight picture right now. It changed over the course of the weekend. The lightweight title picture. WBA is Tank. WBC is Shakur, who fights July 12th. WBO is vacant, and it's going to be Sam Noakes versus Abdullah Mason. And the IBF is now Raymond Muratayez because Vasily Lomachenko retired over the weekend.
Happy Dude, how crazy is this weekend that's not the first thing we're talking about? Not the first thing we're talking about. Not Lomachenko retiring, but wow.
No, we had to talk about a two brothers jumping their opponent. That's right. That's A block. The A block.
Not one of the best fighters we've ever seen in our generation calling it a day at 37.
Amazing. It was kind of cool. Like we watched his whole career from start to finish in the pro ranks, Lomachenko, and you know he had unbelievable skills, obviously. But I was thinking about like what made him so polarizing, because there are people out there that believe he was a hype job. There are people out there that say he's the best.
Control.
The two camps, the two polarizing voices on Lomachenko are hilarious, and I watched them interact with each other all day Friday. There's one side of it that believes Lomachenko is overhyped. He was a creation of HBO, a creation of ESPN, a creation of Bob Arum and Top Rank. He lost his second fight. He lost every big fight that he was in, blah, 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 blah. Then there's the right, other side, not the right, not right or wrong. There's the right-handed side. The other side is the over-the-top praise. This is the best raw talent we've seen since Floyd and Ali, you know, first ballot Hall of Famer. It was an honor, and like going over the top, which I don't 100% agree with. I'm more like, let's use a little nuance here when we think of Vasily Lomachenko's career. But it was funny to watch them interact with each other on Twitter. That's the beauty of Twitter sometimes. But I lean more towards like this was an all-time great. You know, look at the Gary Russell fight in his third fight. He disarmed Gary Russell in his third pro fight.
Crazy, absolutely crazy. I remember watching that fight live and being like, whoa, because I remember the Salido fight, the second Salido, when he fought Salido in a second pro fight. I remember when they announced that, I'm like that's crazy. Salido is a really tough, rough guy, and he's really good. I'm like, this guy's gonna fight him in his second fight, and sure enough, he lost. I remember being like, yeah, exactly, wrong guy to fight,
punched him in the nuts all night.
Yeah, wrong guy to fight in your second pro fight. I was like, see, that's why you don't go right to titles. I was mad about that, because he wanted to fight for a title in his first fight, and he got mad.
That was the reason he signed with Top Rank.
Yeah, and then he comes back and he gets the Gary Russell fight, and I was like, holy cow, this guy is, because I knew how good Russell is, obviously. In hindsight, that fight looks even better, but I was like, man, this guy's something else. And then his fourth pro fight was on my undercard when I fought Pacquiao. So I was on the dais with Lomachenko all through that lead up.
Didn't know that.
And here we are, you know. So that was his fourth pro fight. That was my 20th, and he's just retiring now. It's just it's full circle, man. It's this boxing world. Interesting.
Wild. You know, he did benefit greatly from fighting on HBO, kind of towards the tail end of Mayweather. When did he made his debut?
That must have been, what, 2012, 13?
I'm trying to get the exact date, because he made his debut in 2013. Yeah. And by that time, Mayweather was off of HBO. And Mayweather was already with Showtime. And HBO was looking for their next guy. You know, Andre Ward was pound for pound number one or number two, and he was with HBO. Lomachenko was their big signing. And Arum had the full Arum. Best guy I've ever promoted. He's up there with Muhammad Ali. I remember him in the ring afterwards saying that after his first win, Lomachenko, his first fight, or when they signed him. It's like, we just signed the greatest fighter ever. I'm like, really? Who is this guy? And then the videos start coming out with him, you know, touching all the tennis balls and the crazy training videos. They call him the Matrix, and he's got a cool name. Like, even my friends that don't follow boxing were like, yo, who's this Lomachenko guy that's like all over HBO and like all over the internet? It wasn't even like Instagram yet, and like high tech. He had great marketing. And then HBO, he does the whole HBO thing, which is huge. You know, 24/7s and cross promotion when Sopranos and Entourage and everything that HBO could offer. Then Top Rank goes over to ESPN. And next thing you know, he's everywhere. He's on SportsCenter. He's on all the ESPN social media accounts. Social media takes off. And we're seeing way more of Lomachenko, and he's got a title in his third fight. And he's making dudes quit on the stool Nomashchenko.
Nomashchenko. Got the best.
But those wins, get extremely overlooked. It's like, dude, he was making like Nicholas Walters. Remember how like
Nicholas Walters was? Yeah, well, he was the axe man, and he completely axed Nonito Donaire, destroyed him. I was at that fight. Two fights later, Lomachenko's making him quit in the corner. Ridiculous. Right?
He made Walters quit. He stops Jason Sosa, Mariaga. The Rigondeaux fight was hugely promoted, and he ended up stopping him, making him just give up. I mean, there was that whole run. And then he goes up to 135, a division that he should never have even stepped foot in, considering how small he was. And yeah. He stops Linares at the Garden.
In a war. A body shot.
Awesome fight. Beats Pedraza, who wasn't exactly shot then. Krolla, Luke Campbell, the Teofimo. Okay, now we get into the
But that Krolla knockout, dude, that was highlight reel, ridiculous hook right behind the ear, face down. Like, that was a crazy knockout.
That was huge. Goes over to the UK, beats Campbell, has a hero's welcome there. And now we head into the twilight of his career, 2020 on, the big fights. The Lomachenko, the Lopez fight was
Teofimo. You know,
this is the fights that are going to, when you want to look those detractors, that one camp that don't look at him as like this is all time great, is because of the losses to Lopez and the losses to Haney. You know, the first six rounds against Teofimo are going to haunt him, because what the heck was he doing? He didn't throw any punches. Like, he had a shoulder injury, but he turned it on the seventh on and made it a real fight. And it was like, still a close fight.
Yeah, it was the first six and the last round. Like that was one of the easiest scores fights to score. I called the fight live. I called a lot of those fights live. I called the Krolla fight live in LA. I called the Lomachenko and Lopez fight in the bubble because that was during the pandemic. Yeah, and it was so strange. I called that one as well. He didn't fight for the first six rounds, and then he starts getting in Tio's ass round 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, and then round 12, Tio just. Pulls out a perfect, awesome, like last stand and wins the round. I'm just like, he just won the fight 7-5. Like, I don't know how you argue that. They were so clear cut each round. I mean, I guess even those first six, man, it was clear cut. It was so odd.
And
it was like the only round where they both, the only round where they both actually tried to win the round was round 12 and Tio won it. So I'm like,
he landed a lot of punches, the kid won
the fight.
But that was like the beginning. I wouldn't say the beginning of the end, but that was really was the beginning of the end. This is when we started to wonder about Lomachenko. You know, long amateur career, 395-1, which we just glossed crazy. Over that. two-time Olympian,
two-time gold medalist, gold medalist.
You have to put the whole look at the whole career, not just the pros.
It's ridiculous.
Like his whole boxing career is absurd.
Anyone who doesn't give him his flowers doesn't understand how important Olympic gold medals are. They don't understand how difficult the amateurs are, how crazy international amateur level boxing is.
I got to stop giving air to the haters.
Yeah.
I'm too online, bro. I'm seeing all this stuff. But the Lopez fight was the beginning of the end, or the beginning of this narrative where Lomachenko can't win the big fight. How about him just taking on Lopez, who was the young gun? Lomachenko's a huge favorite. Huge favorite heading into that fight. I remember, you know, that was a huge fight inside the bubble, and there was all eyes were on. It was probably the biggest fight out of COVID. It was like the first big one. Yeah, because Tank fought later on that month against Santa Cruz, and they had a little bit of a crowd there. This was October of 2020. So this is kind of like the first big one that I can remember of 2020 and the COVID stuff, and it was hyped properly. It was really promoted well, but Lomachenko was supposed to win that fight. He was the favorite, and that was going to be the beginning of him going on trying to become undisputed at 135. And he loses to Lopez. He lost that fight. There's no like, oh my god, I thought he won. He lost it. Let's just like you explained.
Don't say that to Lomachenko. Don't say that to Vasily.
You know, we got to a public thing. Like he did not agree with the CompuBox, and he took it really like. Personally, took it far. He said him and his dad fired up their own CompuBox, and they were tweeting. Like his dad was like tweeting at us and being like, "We did our own CompuBox, and no, we didn't see what you saw." And like I fired off a dumb tweet in hindsight, and like I kind of got over it, and like I never held it against him any further because I was like, "This is stupid. No one really cares about this in boxing. Like this was like a personal thing." got over it and was like, whatever, he's a great champion. I love this guy. I want to continue to watch him fight. But yeah, he thought he won. You know, he has the shoulder surgery, and
he came into the Nakatani fighter interview. I called that fight as well, and he's literally going right down the line. He's like, "Did you think I won? Did you think going after everyone? He was like naming names. He was like, and he said Andre Ward. He was like, you understood that I won that fight. He was like no one else did. Blah, blah, blah. It was like he was like really adamant. Came in there pissed. He walked through the door like
rampage.
He walked through the door with like mean mugging the entire room. So I was like, wow, this guy really thinks he won that fight.
We got the wrath of it. The wrath of it. I remember going to my dad, like, Dad, like Lomachenko and his dad fired up their own CompuBox. I don't know how. He said they did it by hand. They were like writing down on a pad every time a punch landed. They're like, I'm sure Lomachenko can because he's got great hand-eye coordination. I would love to see him like do that.
I was kind of joining the group a little bit, writing him off a little bit after that fight. And I was like, I think it's just past his prime. And then the Nakatani fight, I was like, oh shit, maybe his shoulder really was hurt because he looked so damn good in that fight. I was like, oh, he's back. And sure enough, I mean, he had a good run after that.
Yeah, Nakatani, the Comey win was a good one. That was when he was like showing mercy for Comey inside the ring.
He let Comey live because he liked him.
Okay, then the Jermaine Ortiz fight was questionable.
That was rough. That was rough.
It's like, damn, maybe Loma is washed. Wins that. Haney, this was the end. This was the end for Lomachenko. He was his chance to become undisputed. That's the only thing that he said he hadn't done in boxing, and it's the only thing he really wanted to do. He was getting up there in age. Every other accolade, fastest to a world title, fastest to a two-division world title, fastest to a three-division world title, two-time Olympian, but did not become undisputed. He has his chance in Haney. Extremely close fight. Still going to be debated for a really long time. I thought Haney did just enough. I believe you feel the same way. You were there. You thought it was a draw.
Yeah.
Maybe you could have got a rematch, but.
I scored it a draw that night. I went back and I watched it, but it's never the same going back and watch it. I could see how Haney won. But
115, 113, 116, 112, 115, 113.
I had a draw. I always argue with Paulie because Paulie thinks like there's no shot that Haney won. Yeah, he said there's no shot that and he loves Loma. And he's like, shot he won that fight. So I have to take the opposite stance whenever I can.
Does he still have the beef with Haney? I don't know. Maybe they made up or maybe you don't have to comment on it if you don't want to. Because I know that
I'm not gonna speak for another man's beef,
but I was working an MVP show with him, Paulie, and whatever. Loses to Haney, crying in the locker room afterwards because he knew that was it. He knew that this is the closest I'll ever get to undisputed unless I get a rematch. Haney was not going to give Lomachenko a rematch. Haney was going to
that fight was awesome, by the way. Awesome. That fight was really, really amazing. Like, it was a tremendous, tremendous fight.
Bro, he was like in his late 30s. He's my age, so 2 years. He was 35 fighting a 24-year-old Haney at a weight class he did not belong at. And a big Haney. We're talking
really big.
Weight bully Haney at 135 and pushed him to the limit. Yes, he lost. Close one. Closer than the Teo fight. But he went in there and he gave it a go, as I say. He lost, seemed crying afterwards because he realized that was it. Wins another belt. Maybe thinks about over Kambosos, stops Kambosos, which, you know, say what you want about Kambosos, pretty durable guy. And Lomachenko was able to stop him and picks up the IBF belt. And then there was this like, oh, maybe he'll fight Tank. Maybe he'll start over again and try to become undisputed. But no, you know, the longer we did not hear from him, when the Tank fight fell apart, you know, he was probably done already and was just waiting to announce it.
And well, we also forgot about the war in Ukraine. We forgot about that. That took him.
I don't see that on BoxRec, but yes, you're right.
That took him out of the running for a little bit as well. It's just a career with a bunch of pitfalls, you know. And between COVID and the war in Ukraine, injuries, a lot of pitfalls, but he still got a lot done. You know, the only thing that he didn't do was that undisputed. I mean, but all in all, absolutely phenomenal, tremendous career, and one of the best of our generation.
Dude, we're not going to see a career like this again. I mean, come on. No. The amateur ranks, the a guy fighting for a world title in his second or third fight, jumping up weight classes, how he won these fights, too.
That's like, another matter. Yeah.
How he
stylistically,
won.
He was unique.
The footwork.
Supremely unique.
The footwork, stopping guys, benefiting from one of the only few fighters that fought on both HBO and ESPN. So he got that full marketing push. And that's really important in boxing because not every fighter is promoted the same. There are some outstanding fighters out there that get zero promotion. And there are some fighters out there that aren't as good as some of the other ones that get all the promotion in the world. It's not equal. So he benefited. He was like the perfect storm of being sublimely talented and also having a huge promoter in Top Rank, maybe the greatest promoter ever, Bob Arum, HBO, and ESPN. So great career. I mean, the guy, everyone would sign up for a career like Lomachenko. So if he does stay retired, because you never know in this sport, awesome. It was a real, real honor to watch him get in that ring. Quickly, let's go through some topics and some fights. This was supposed to be the lead story last week. Teofimo Lopez, Haney situation. Teofimo turns down Devin Haney. Apparently, it was like $11 million to fight August 16th in Saudi Arabia. They had agreed to the fight. Then Teofimo at the last minute pulled out of it. They're moving on with that card. And that August 16th card is now Moses Atuma versus Dillian White.
I will say, though, I did hear the money was different. Not quite so.
Wasn't high, $11
million? No.
That's a lot of money. That's 11. 11's a lot. I didn't see that like confirmed anywhere. I saw some hearsay. 11's crazy. It was a lot.
But based on what Tio's made in the past or what he's made up to this point, it's a tremendous amount of money that was passed up.
The amount of complaining he died. I didn't even take home $1 million. I made nothing for the Lomachenko fight. You know, like that. He was telling on himself a lot, Tio. Like, I'm not making as much as some of these other guys, blah, blah, blah. So it was a record.
Oh, purse. In terms of talent to dollar signs, he's the lowest paid guy. I mean, of all this group.
So, exactly. So that's why this was a head scratcher. Apparently, there was the weight. Like, Haney was accepted at 147. Teofimo wanted it at 145. Haney agreed to 145. Even though Lopez said he would fight Boots at 147, ultimately Lopez says no. Like, so there was a weight issue involved. Haney, props to him, wanted this fight and signed off on everything. Tio, once again, like, come on. This is, you know, he's not up there in, like number one clown right now is Keyshawn Davis. Number one or two is Teofimo Lopez right now because you turned down a fight with Haney, a winnable fight. You turned down a record purse. It doesn't make you look great at all. There's no other way to spin this other than I don't know what you're going to do now.
He also insulted Turkey and
pretty bad, bro.
Riyadh season. Pretty bad, really bad. That's like personal attacks. That's completely different.
Yeah, you say what you want. You might not like the whole Saudi, what's going on there. Like, it's their polarizing group.
You might not like business. Talking business is one thing, but like going directly at somebody is another thing.
Dumb. Like, what is this guy thinking? Like, he has great management. And Keith Connolly put out a statement kind of insinuating that I have a mental health issue for Teofimo. He wasn't going to be able to fight in August anyway. I don't know about that. But what we do know is that Teofimo is not fighting Devin Haney. And yesterday he posted a video on his social media, Teofimo. Like, they're all getting weirder and weirder. Like, his videos that this guy puts out.
Social media is just breaking these fighters, these young fighters' brains.
Bro, what is he doing? He's like in the ring with Jabberwocks.
The Jabberwockies. Oh boy.
He's doing a video with the Jabberwockies, and then he's doing like some other thing with like a magician, like. How are these coming about? Is he begging them to do video? Like, they're not going to him and saying, oh my God, the Jabberwockies, whatever the hell they are not saying, we have to do a video with Teofimo Lopez.
No.
And so Tio is like thinking, I say this
all the time. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, but it's not making you money and it's not getting you in the ring. So who cares?
And I say this a lot. Response too.
I say this all the time. Marvin Hagler would be turning over in his grave if you saw how these young champions acted on TikTok.
I hope so, because I hope that they wouldn't be acting the same way on it, which we don't know. I always said, what would it be like if the Four Kings had Twitter and all this money and all this fame? They'd be acting.
Marvin wouldn't be doing dance routines. I'll tell you that much.
Well, I know. Like, once again, Bob Canobio, shout out. He was at the club with Marvin and Sugar Ray, because Bob used to run with
at the same Sugar time. Leonard.
Oh yeah,
they're in the same club.
Woo. Same club. They went into the bathroom and they saw Ray and Marvin. My dad said they came together just before they fought, and they had a stare down in the bathroom, and they were talking shit. My dad just standing there like, my God, this is when boxing was couldn't get any bigger. Like, holy shit, no camera phones, none of that stuff. They're talking shit to each other, blah, blah, blah. They go out into the dance floor. My dad said that Marvin danced exactly like he fought. He was plodding, and he kind of moved slow. And he said, Ray danced like he fought. Like, this guy was like a ballroom dancer, spinning around.
Yeah. Like, super athletic, smooth. Yeah.
Yeah. My dad was saying, he's like, he goes, just imagine, like, I'm just sitting there watching these two, and, like, I don't know where we're going with this. So, yeah, I would think that Hagler probably wouldn't be on TikTok. Ray Leonard?
Sugar might be. Sugar might be. He was in commercials. He's on Wheaties boxes. I can see it.
That goes back to the Keyshawn conversation.
I mean, he is now. He's doing. He hits pads now.
Skechers. Big Skechers.
Yeah, so.
That's when you know you're kind of getting up there in age when you start doing Skecher commercials. Like, these are super comfortable. He wasn't wearing Skechers that night in the club. But going back to, like, the Keyshawn thing, it's like these guys are given a lot of money. They have a huge platform in social media. They have a lot of time on their hands. They're going to do dumb shit. Like, Ray would have done dumb shit. Like, Marvin, all those guys, we just didn't know about it. We less is more. Like, they were a little bit of lore. It was like some – that's why, you know, combining a lot of things right now. That's why, in a way, I kind of respect him. He doesn't do a lot of interviews. Doesn't do a lot of social media.
And he's very buttoned up with his answers. Very buttoned up.
Right? And so, like, it adds to the lore of, in a way. Like, we don't know – we know just enough about him where we're not going to be like, oh, we know every move Teofimo. I mean, all these, like, ridiculous – cries for attention that he's doing lately, and
I don't know, man. we have guys in this generation. I mean, maybe I'm thinking about the generation right before, but, like, even Manny Pacquiao, even though there's a massive media train around him, he wasn't posting things. People were posting things for him. Like, he didn't care about what was out there. Miguel Cotto. Miguel Cotto's not posting nothing. Miguel Cotto doesn't care about social media. Miguel Cotto went out there, whipped your ass. That's a different level of guy. Like, that's kind of much more of an old school throwback.
These guys are getting so much mentality. Money though, dude. Like, they're getting Pacquiao money without the Pacquiao accolades, and they have TikTok, and they have Instagram. I'm not trying to make excuses for Teofimo or Keyshawn, but it's just a lot to deal with right now.
The issue I've always had with social media when I was coming up, and it was way different, you know, even 10 years ago, was just the access. I hated how much personal access there was for people who are watching you on TV, who are able to right into your DM, right into your life, find out where you are when you post a restaurant. I mean, I remember posting restaurants, people showing up. I hated that. I was like, that was vile to me.
That's weird.
And now these guys, I think they relish it. I think they embrace it. And it's just, I don't know, it's a different mentality.
So no more.
We sound like old heads here. I sound like a real old head.
No more steak reviews, because you're going to get pulled up on in Vegas.
Yeah.
All right.
I mean, now it's different. I'm not a world class fighter anymore. You can
world class media pundit.
You can come have a drink with me now. It's not like before.
So that fights off Haney and Teofimo. They pivoted Saudi to an August 16th card that features Moses Atama versus Dillian White, which is going to be interesting.
Cool. That's a cool fight.
If you don't like Dillian White, you're going to be tuning in with a smile on your face. I think he's ultimately going to get stopped. That's a name for Atoma.
It's a real test. It's a test.
You think so?
Dillian White's Dillian White can really punch. He has world-class left hook. And he's experienced and dangerous enough. And I've been watching some of his training videos. I think he's actually training down here with Buddy McGirt. And, you know, he's a big, experienced guy. This is a step up for Moses Atoma, who's, what, 20 years old? Like, this is a...
Said he wants to go 8 rounds, remember?
I think it's a test. I think he should get Dillian out of there as soon as possible. He's way too dangerous to just spend rounds with. So I don't care for that. Just get the job done.
Let's end the show with some other fights that happened this weekend. Did you watch Fabio Wardley versus Justice Hooney?
I did. That knockout was awesome. That was a good fight.
Oh my God. That was awesome. Hooney is up on every card. He's winning the fight. It's a 10th round. Wardley needs that one hitter quitter, needs that Hail Mary, gets it.
Bing.
That's boxing. That's heavyweight
head
boxing.
Head offline. Boom.
It just adds to the lore now of Wardley. I see some Deontay Wilder comparisons because he was losing every minute. Then he erased his Hooney. I think he's a little bit of a better boxer than Wilder, but still has that power. Wardley is definitely a name now, is an intriguing puzzle piece at heavyweight. We're looking for who's next up. I know he's not exactly young, but we're looking at who's next and what's this next generation. you know, it's Atama and Wardley is right up there in terms of like guys I'm excited about, and it's like almost have to tune in to watch him fight.
No, you have to tune in. I mean, this guy came out of nowhere and is a killer. Like, I don't want to say he came out of nowhere, but like, I remember like, I don't know, two fights ago when he smashed in what's his name's head.
That was that's what got my attention. When you dent the man's head like that.
That got everyone's attention. I remember like so many people reaching out to me like, yo, this guy's a monster. And they kill him like, yeah. And apparently he really is, because he's still icing guys with single shots and coming from behind. Hard guy not to like, man. That's an awesome heavyweight style.
That was a great, really fun fight and really awesome highlight reel knockout and the beauty of heavyweight boxing. Because Hooney, like, I was thinking about putting some money on him because he was plus 260 underdog.
Well, our man Teddy Atlas was out there posting his bets on Hooney, yeah, and like that got a lot of people tuned in.
So I was calling the fights this weekend with for Most Valuable Promotions with Antonio Tarver.
Tony.
I showed him that tweet. And I was like, yo, man, like I'm about to put some money on Hooney, but I couldn't. You can't place bets in Florida. Which ended up being great for me to save me some money. And Tarver's like, I don't know, man. I don't know. He's like, Teddy, yeah, Teddy's not always right. I was like, okay. So we're calling the fights. And
you should ask me about that because I disagreed with Teddy as well. So.
Well, I didn't put any money down, so we're good. It was close. I mean, barring that shot, I mean, Hooney probably wins.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
So I see the highlight as I'm calling the prelims with Tarver, and I show him the highlight while we're on the air, and he's like, oh. And then he goes to his phone, Tarver, and he goes to the notes app and he writes Teddy Atlas, LOL. And I start laughing with Tarver, who is just an awesome guy to work with, hang out with. Like that dude,
he's the best.
Breathes, sleeps boxing. I was calling the fights with him. He was literally first fight of the night, like a 1-0 guy versus a 2-0 guy. He is jabbing along with them while calling the fight. He's like in bobbing and weaving throughout the whole night. Giving outstanding instructions. I learned a lot from the Magic Man. And I had to tell him, too, on the air, like, you kind of ruined my childhood when you knocked out.
Roy.
Yeah. He goes, oh, I'm sorry. He thought I was serious. He's like, oh, I'm so sorry about that, man. I was like, no, bro, I'm just kind of kidding, you know? Like, it wasn't ruined.
I'm just ribbing you.
That was cool. That happened this weekend. So Fabio Wardley, put him in exciting fights. Keep him going. 30 years old. Another fighter, another Queensberry over Matchroom win. Eddie takes another L at the hands of Frank Warren.
Is Frank Warren undefeated right now?
Do you think Frank sends him texts at like middle of the night, like fucker, got you?
Absolutely.
Hey, boy, wonder, take that.
He's like, that's another tally mark.
Right, he probably just tortures Eddie all definitely. All
definitely
hours of
definitely
the night.
Sending him the record and the scorecard. Yeah, for sure.
Sunday, early Sunday morning, Junto Nakatani KOs Ryosuke Nishida, sixth round. He's now the IBF champ, Nakatani. He's 5-0 at 118 with five stoppages, systematic breakdown. Inoue was ringside. Inoue fires off a tweet after, says, welcome to 122. I don't know where he got that from, because Rudy Hernandez, trainer of Nakatani, says, hey, we're not going to 122 just yet. But Nakatani being getting that win, Inoue being ringside, I mean, this is shaping up to be Japan's Hagler Hearns, Inoue versus Nakatani. It's becoming the fight in boxing for the diehards. I think we got to go to Japan, Chris. I think we got to be ringside for this.
Book it. I'm ready. I got my passport up to date. That's the fight, man. That is the fight. And this fight about with Nakatani shows me that he's actually ready for Inoue, because he was tough. It was a tough go early on. He was fighting on the inside, getting hit with some shots. And he had a guy who, granted, he ultimately stopped him, but he wasn't highlight reel knocking out this guy. He wasn't hitting him with these crazy shots. Like, he had to break him down systematically. Fighting on the inside, which I don't think was such a great idea early on. But then he had that ability to adjust and fight from the outside, which you're going to have to do that in a way. Because one way is not going to work with him. You're going to have to give him different looks. And Nakatani showed that. He showed he can deal with some adversity. He can deal with a guy who can take his shot. As of right now, Nakatani, in a way, is the fight to make. Nakatani's ready. Not saying he beats him. He has what it takes to beat him, but I think he's ready in terms of his development and maturity and experience level to fight in a way as soon as possible.
I wish it was next, because in a way is
going That's
to be
the problem,
fighting.
Because MJ might win. MJ is a bad dude.
If that guy spoils it, it would be kind of
very upset.
Kind of a little funny in a way, because he's the guy that, in a way, I wouldn't say avoided, but he was like the one guy in the way who wanted that fight badly. In a way, he's like, all right, take it.
Okay, but he lost. I know. People who argue like, oh, he's avoiding Aquedano. Shut up. He lost. And then in a way knocked out the guy that beat him. So don't lose, dude.
No, I get that. Yeah, that's a whole other discussion. But like, he's now fighting him at 122. Nakatani has to go up to 122. Things have to happen for this fight to be made, but I think it's trending in the right direction. I think in a way we'll welcome it because he just has that mentality. Obviously, Nakatani wants it. And Nakatani's live dog in that fight. You know, like he's got power. He's got height, reach,
style. He has that. He's got a nice instinct. Hybrid style.
Yeah, hybrid style, killer instinct. Inoue has to beat MJ. I don't know what's going on in December, because Nick Ball is now fighting Sam Goodman on that August 16th card that we just talked about. So I don't know if like with the winner of that, would they turn around Ball Goodman from August to December and serve him up to Inoue? Will Inoue just not do December and then, you know, do like a May of next year against Nakatani? I wouldn't be upset with that. You know, I
wait, so that's, that means months. That means Goodman moved up to 26. This is his first fight at 26.
Oh yeah, I didn't realize that either. Not that he deserves it. I mean,
he was. I mean, 26 is so deep. How is he going to be able to go up? Right, whatever. But yeah, so that'll be his first fight. Oof, getting welcomed to 126 by Nick Ball. That's a tough night.
Yeah, it's a tough night at the office. But I don't know what will happen in December for Inoue. If he will take that December fight in Saudi, because it's Nakatani. Nakatani Inoue is one of the. It's probably the best fight you can make in boxing right now.
It's my favorite fight to make right now. Yeah.
And I've been saying that for a while. Tokyo. Yeah. Tokyo Dome next May, I would say next spring. I could see that fight happening. It's not going to happen this year.
No, but we should go. We should go to that one.
Bro, I got it. I mean, it just looks so cool. Like the Tokyo Dome looks awesome. Japan
is awesome.
Just eating all that great sushi and food. And Kobe beef.
Inoue fight weeks are always awesome.
Kobe beef and Inoue.
Kobe beef and Inoue.
What a combination. The biggest fight in Japanese history.
Tokyo Dome, history, good food. I like it.
The content would be off the charts. That's really it. I mean, kudos to us. We just got a lot of topics in, and we're right at the 1 hour mark. I don't like to go over an hour. I like to keep it at an hour. Chris is a busy man. He's got a small bladder. He has to pee after every episode.
Sure.
You don't want anyone to know where you're eating at. And I just told everyone that you have a small bladder.
I have to hydrate. I drink all episodes too, if you notice. I'm always hydrating.
Always drink, and I got an iced coffee between me and you.
I had bone broth. I had a collagen mix, and now I'm just drinking water.
Damn, liquids. Chris, liquids, Algeria. We'll be back on Thursday or Friday. To preview Kambosos, Hitchens, and whatever else is going on in this sport. And then we'll be back Monday, because Sunday is Father's Day. I'll be in Boston and Fenway, Yankees, Red Sox, going with Bob. Head ship it up to Boston. So I'll be traveling back on Sunday. Trying to get on a regular schedule.
To Beantown.
Yeah, Yankees versus Red Sox. Want to get back on the regular schedule. Thank you for bearing with us. This was a fun episode. There's a lot to get to. We'll have more. Never a dull moment in this sport. Oh, another thing too. I forgot to even add at the end, very tail end of the show. Canelo Crawford, September 13th on Netflix, official. And Dana White is back to being the promoter. So, I mean, that's not huge news. It's kind of a foregone conclusion. We'll talk more about that in the next episode.
Well, let's talk more about that. We can expand on that a little bit, because I don't really know what the hell's going on, or if I care.
We got some stability.
I don't know.
We have a date. We have a city. We didn't have that like 2 days ago. And we have a platform. It's on Netflix, free. It's not on pay-per-view. And it's also...
But like Dana's involvement, what does that really matter?
Just a big face in the middle of the two guys.
Yeah. That's what I mean. That's yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. ESPN, like, I don't know. Well, I have to think more on it.
I mean, good for him. Good for the opportunity. I mean, I don't know.
Shit on boxing for years. Now gets the
biggest fight. he's always been a quiet fan.
I want to see how I'm curious about how he promotes this and how they go about it, because this is a fight that promotes itself, but it could use a little extra oomph.
I'm just going to, I'm thinking they're just going to throw money at it until it works. I think that's going to be the method. Just all the money.
That's right.
Everybody tune in.
Boxing is throw money. Put it everywhere. All right, guys. See you Thursday, Friday. Thank you for joining us. As always, love doing this show every single week with you. Keep your hands up all times. Protect yourselves at all times. Stay out of those DMs. Let Chris Algieri eat in peace.
Two Good & Co. coffee creamers are made with farm-fresh cream, real milk, and contain 3 grams of sugar per serving. That's 40% less than the 5 grams per serving in leading traditional coffee creamers for a rich, delicious experience. Whether you enjoy your coffee hot, cold, bold, or frothy, Two Good coffee creamers make every sip a good one. Two Good coffee creamers, real goodness in every sip. Find them at your local Kroger in the creamer aisle.